Hello and welcome to another episode of the New Earth Architectress podcast. I am delighted to create a container for you to deepen in what's possible when we bridge spirit with form in our architecture practice and what that can do for our clients and for our own architecture practice and our own personal development, as well as spiritual development. This topic is one that I am exploring and experimenting with in the construction of my own home, how to make spirit visible in the forms that we use in architecture. And when I mean forms, I'm talking about walls, entrances, doorways, stairs, windows, roofs, foundations, any elements within the garden. And how can architecture turn into a language of spirit? How can architecture create a configuration of elements, a composition of elements that express something deep about ourselves, something deep about this world, something deep about our connection and relationship with our environment, with nature, something deep about our evolution, something deep about our consciousness. So I don't think that every single space is the point where it feels heavy. And so I don't know, like has the frequency or the quality of a monastery. That is certainly a quality of space that you want to, that it needs to be crafted for certain situations, not all, right? Certain sites, certain needs. But what I want to bring forward in this conversation today is how can architecture become a true reflection of ourselves? How can architecture resurrect the lost temple? The lost temple is within us. And, well, the temple is within us, and it's our job to find it, because we, over, you know, centuries of being misguided, torn apart, taken on a path that is removed and divorced from the realms of beauty, the realms of life, the realms of spirit. It is our task as heart-centered, spirit-led, intuitive architects to bridge spirit back with form again and to resurrect this lost temple. Now, this may sound very esoteric, but what can it look like in modern days to resurrect our temple within? This is about bringing all the pieces back together again, the pieces that we've lost, the pieces that are keys and codes to our truest, highest unfolding, the keys that support us for long-lasting healing on the emotional plane, physical plane, psychological. And how can we use architecture as a vehicle to help us remember this union that once was, I remember in one of my interviews with Dorea Karim, Dr. Ibrahim Karim's daughter, she talked about how quality and quantity are marking two faces of the same coin, right? Spirit and matter. the feminine, the masculine are actually the same coin, right? And when they are in union, there's this zero point quality energy that we see in power spots, that we see at sacred sites, that we experience in sacred sites, when we experience when we walk into, let's say, a really beautifully crafted cathedral. I'm thinking about something of the caliber of Chartres in France, a beautiful mosque, a beautiful temple of some kind. And because of the configuration of forms, of colors, of lines and geometries, there is this incredible balancing, harmonizing energy that is emitted from these spaces. And so in modernism, so much of the forms that brought life to architecture got wiped out. Now, this is not all bad. There was a time in architecture, I think of the Rococo period, Baroque Rococo, where there are just like insane amounts of ornaments. And there was this book called, what was it? Ornament as Crime. I think it's Adolf Loos who wrote this book. And so it's like, let's eradicate the ornament, you know, wipe it out of architecture, and let's start building super minimal spaces, super minimal boxes. I think on a certain level, we needed that. We needed to get rid of, purge ourselves from iconography on buildings, symbols, imagery, forms, frilly things, golds, whatever's, just like all this action, right, on the facades. I'm thinking more on the external, but of course on the internal as well. You had all these ornaments, paints, colors, imagery, some a lot to do with religion, right? And you could even go as far as some of this imagery was propaganda, right, for the public, or some of the forms were kind of leftovers of, you know, the Hellenistic period, one of the highest times in architecture, but they just got kind of dissolved, reduced down to, ornaments that you just kind of paste on the building without really deeply understanding their spiritual their high spirit technology function. A good example of this is the capital on the Ionic column. If you bring forward the architects, and we'll likely know what I'm talking about when I say the Ionic column. This is the ancient Greek column, where there are spirals on the top, just simply two, I believe. I'm not sure if it was actually four in plan, but you know, you see these two spirals at the top of the column, and at the base of the column there's a certain base supporting it at certain proportions. The column is actually not straight, and it is bulging out a little bit to show forces to show the forces in action. I'm going to get to this part, but also to create an optical illusion as well, of support, to show support. That's a better way of saying it. Then you've got the beam on top. The Ionic column, or the Doric column, or the Corinthian column, they're not able to generate their energy. They're not able to generate their energy without the beam on top, without the base that it sits on. So what ends up happening in the later years of, yeah, I keep on thinking Rococo, but I, you know, I'm really not good with the time periods and the, you know, the names of each era of architectural history. But there came a point where all these elements of ancient architecture, and not only, I'm not saying it's only Greek, ancient Greek architecture, you know, you could use various other kinds of examples, you know, in Islamic architecture as well. We see this in Turkey, where I live, where they're just like copy pasting, you know, from one of the greatest mosques in Istanbul, and they're trying to kind of just copy it onto, paste it onto almost like wallpaper, right? Onto a new construction. So what ended up happening is that these elements that were functioning as a whole together were broken up and torn apart and pulled off into different zones and areas and just started to basically be used as makeup rather than essential components, elements to creating a vessel of light, really, a vessel of energy, a vessel that can transmit flows and paths of life force and create harmonizing frequencies that heal people and the land. Now, some of these frequencies, now some of these configurations and ways of creating architecture were not always like, were not always used for, you know, just pure, honest healing of people. I mean, sometimes, you know, because people knew how to, in the ancient times, knew how to, had access to the tools and keys to be able to create magic with architecture, sometimes that was also used for propaganda, right? Sometimes that was also used for spreading a certain vision, maybe a dogmatic vision, etc. But I want to, just for the sake of just simplicity here, I'm referring to the temples that were of pure love and light, and the ones that were working in concert with the spirit of the land where they were built, in concert with the nature spirits, in concert with benevolent beings of light, angels, and that these temples, these spaces, this architecture was created in celebration of all of that, in celebration of the beauty of not only nature, but also of the human being. Because the human being is this bridge between spirit and form. So going back to Adolf Loos, and ornament, and ornament is crime. In that sense, sure, it is a crime to start to pull apart architectural elements, chop them up into pieces, and start copy-pasting them everywhere. But on the other hand, through that great purging that occurred in modernism, we ended up losing the life force. We ended up losing the beauty, the color, the fun. We ended up losing forms that also indicated to us the forces at work in nature. So going back to the Ionic column, and this is something that I've been meditating on a lot, and in my trips to Ephesus, guiding women architects and designers, and these incredible pilgrimages there. You know, you see often these columns that are without the beams, but you really need to see the whole thing together. So the beam has a weight to it, right? And there's a downward force due to gravity and weight being pressed down upon the capital of the column. And then there's an upward force from the column, right, intersecting with the horizontal beam. And when these two forces move, you know, intersect with each other, they merge, they meet each other, what ends up actually happening is that in nature, you'll see these spirals. You can't see them really with physical eyes. You need to see them with your inner eye. And the ancient Greeks, they knew this. They also, you know, knew it also in other ancient cultures. And they were also showing the weight within the body of the column. And so there's this beautiful proportion there with this kind of expanded body of the column. It's not straight. If people are reproducing ancient Greek columns straight, it's not correct. And of course, it depends on the site, depends on the proportion of the temple. You know, Doric columns are different than Ionic ones, et cetera. So they're all working as a whole and showing the forces at play. In this day and age, when we are awakening to the fact that spirit does exist, energy does exist. There are forces within the land that exist. There are energies that are emitted by waterways under the earth. There are energies emitted when ley lines cross the earth, like our meridians, right? Where our body is like the land. And so, you know, a Chinese medicine doctor, traditional Chinese medicine doctor will know this, will know that when there are blockages with certain meridians in our body, that creates an energy first. There's an energy to that, which then creates the illness, right? And so there's this whole world, this unseen world that is now becoming more, that we're becoming more and more aware of in our lives. And it's a world that we once knew how to co-create with. It's a world that we knew how to create technologies with. It's a world where we would used to create and build the most beautiful temples and spaces with. And now that world is asking us to unite with it again. So what can this look like in the architecture of now and of the future? I don't suggest that we copy paste the ancient architecture, the ancient temple architecture. While it's tempting, right, to be replicating certain geometries and forms, and sometimes it's good too. Sometimes these are forms that are eternal, right? They're like the spiral. I'm looking at the stair right now that I crafted with my builders and with a beautiful Tadalact lime plastering team. And I created this sculpture myself with my own hands to show an upward moving force, a growth principle, life. And there are two spirals forming they're forming a zero point as they do this. Okay. If for those of you who are watching the YouTube video, you'll see my hands come together in a kind of vortex form. The architecture that we see typically these days is still very barren. It's left over from the modern animal spaces, you know, having a space where there's just not filled with clutter, right? You don't have like all this, like these ornaments and, you know, gold leaves and, you know, just that becomes too much, too suffocating, these kinds of, you know, excessive use of ornament. But we need to start to, in my perspective, and in my experience, and in, you know, receiving guidance from the nature spirits and my council of light, when I work with my clients on their properties, there's a lot that is being shown for us to birth buildings that have beauty again, that hold beauty, that express themselves again, that express themselves with more flowing forms, with more color. And how can we start to bring that principle back of showing how a beam presses down on a column or a wall, and what kind of support, forms and forces start to appear when that happens, but also how do we give a sense of support? How do we give a sense of, okay, this wall is supporting the ceiling. This wall is supporting the roof. You know, in modernist architecture, you could get a lot of cantilevers. And I believe in feng shui, maybe in the form school, you know, these kinds of excessive cantilevers, sharp corners, sharp, tight edges, right? Where things start to feel precarious. Now, when we're flipping through the magazine, we may, you know, go like, oh yeah, that's super cool, right? Like just thinking about the engineering that's behind some of the architectural wonders of the world, right? I mean, architects are really doing incredible things right now, especially in the Middle East and in Dubai, Saudi Arabia. But we need to just hold and hold on for a second. Hold on for a second. Take a moment to close our eyes and tune into what kind of energy are these forms producing. Do I really feel safe under this super, I don't know, like I'm just going to make an exaggeration here, like, you know, 30 meter cantilever off the edge of this cliff, right? Or off the edge of this like glass wall, okay? Imagine glass wall. And then you've got like a 30 meter massive cantilever. And then there's like a kind of public space under that. Does this glass wall really give the sense that it can support that cantilever well? And can the right kind of energy flow and move through it? I have a cantilever in my own house. I'm working with an existing concrete structure that was built by my husband some years back in, you know, with his father and brother. And we were in Canada living there at the time when this house was being constructed, and we didn't even know that we were going to build live here. So I've come in to bring the feminine back to this what I felt was a pretty dead structure. And there's a small cantilever, about like 1.4 meter cantilever on the front of the facade of our house. Just think a very minimal white box, Adolf Loos, right? And I actually, now I brought in, it's actually made out of foam. It's like these details that you can put under balconies or on facades to bring a little bit of ornament to the facade. Now, Some, you know, hardcore modernist architects might be like, oh my God, Aisha, I can't believe you did that, right? That's such a lie. It's such a lie that you, you know, you pasted these foam curves under the cantilever because they're not really there. They're not part of the structure. Now, ideally, it would have been good to actually form the concrete so that, right, so that it was curving and that it was really supporting this cantilever in such a way to bring softness to that otherwise harsh corner, which occurs when you have a cantilever. Getting into some real precise details here. I hope this is helpful because I find it helpful when I hear about, you know, real life stories regarding building and construction and architecture. But, you know, I came later in the picture. We decided to move here later in the picture. And I knew I needed to do something about this edge because each time we were sitting under it, and you could even just watching it and looking at it, I can feel it. It's like buzzing with like, I feel a lot through my teeth. Just buzzing with an off energy. Like it doesn't give a sense of support. If you look at the human hand, if you look at your body, actually there are no parts of you that are connected via a very sharp angle or a sharp or a really like clean 90 degrees. I'm not suggesting that we have to copy our body parts to create architecture, but it's something to tune into. Like there's gradual transitions between one form and the other, rather than it being so in like all these sharp pieces coming together, like being connected or pasted together, if you know what I mean. The work of Rudolf Steiner, the architecture that he started to birth in the late 1800s, is a really good example of what's possible, I think, for organic architecture and architecture that really embraces the evolution of humanity and, it's an architecture that really is quite healing. When I first came upon his architecture, I visited the Goetheanum in Switzerland quite a few times. Even worked on a project in that town, in that village. At first, it's like, oh, this is like kind of like, is it Smurfyville or like, is it just, a little bit overboard with the organic forms? But as you move through the village and look at all the homes as well as experience the Goetheanum itself, it's really quite powerful. The energies that are emitted through this architecture. And this architecture is of, you know, rooted in the principle of metamorphosis. And so the building changes as you move from one facade to the other, but not in a harsh way. It's not like a stop, go. It's how does one form metamorphosize, transform into the other. It's great to meditate on the human skeleton too. How does the foot bone metamorphosize all the way up to the skull, for example? I'm exploring this principle in certain areas and spaces of my home. It'll be interesting to explore how to do that on a white concrete box that, you know, I'm coming into later. So it's not like I could really sculpt the structure and form itself, but, you know, I think it's going to be fun to explore how to bring a certain story and weave that thread from one facade to the other, related to maybe the directions, north, east, south, and west, the elements, the qualities and of spaces that I want to create on each side of the building, and then make that visible through, it could be through mosaics, could be through color. I'm exploring creating some new forms around the window frames to have them all somehow grow and change throughout the facade. So lots of ideas streaming through. And so I encourage you to, you know, even if you're an interior designer and you're working with architects, to really challenge them with going beyond the sharp, dead box. What else can you weave in and bring in to the space? Like, are there chamfered corners, but they only come to a certain level? And then you've got plants hanging from the top of those chamfered walls. What's the ceiling like, right? Is there a kind of curve or a depth to it? What are the shape of windows? I know windows can be really expensive when you start to craft them really super custom. But can you start to work with, arches or amorphous shapes that can be, you know, highlighted or created and crafted around the window frame? So bridging spirit with form. I invite you to play more and more with this. I think in the last podcast episode, I talked about how this was the master builder month episode. I talked about how nowadays we've got a lot of people talking about a lot of stuff. I'm talking to you about sacred architecture. I'm talking to you about the new earth architecture. And there's a risk of us talking too much and not actually doing anything with our hands. There's a risk of us talking about energetic architecture, but not really, really practicing it. And so in honor of bridging spirit with form, I invite you to really start to play with color, start to play with, what kind of details can I bring into a space that will give it more of a soft feeling inside, create an activating energy? There are all kinds of tools that you can use to create more depth in a space, and start to weave in geometries and forms that really speak spirit. Notice what comes up as I speak with you. Often a lot of women tell me that, you know, just in my presence or just when I'm speaking about something, they start to see. They start to see and vision what this architecture that wants to be birthed through them looks like. So in fact, I invite you in this moment to take a few breaths and close your eyes. And bring into your energy field a space, a place that you want to create and craft. This could be a space and place for one of your clients that you're working on. It could be your own home. It could be a garden space. Or it may be a space and place that you don't even know that you're going to work on that comes into your field and is something that you will be creating in the future. So closing your eyes. And I invite you to imagine yourself standing on the earth, on the ground, on the land of this space. Even if you're in an apartment building, you have the capacity to connect with the earth deep, deep, deep down below. and really getting your feet rooted in the earth. Giving your warm gratitude and thanks to the earth. Thank you for providing me with the earth, the soil, the ground to plant my foundations, to plant the foundations of this project. And then I invite you to start building the floor of this space. And then building the walls. Perhaps there are columns. And then the roof, the ceiling, allowing this space to merge, to grow from the soil, like a plant, perhaps. And noticing where there's light entering in the space and where there isn't. Is it a vast, big, expansive space, or is it a really small, contained space? And tuning into, you know, communicating with the structure of this building, the structure of this space, and asking it to show the forms that are most optimal to create the frequency, the energy, the taste, the quality of the space that you want to create to support certain activities. Now, an activity may be a meditation hall. Another activity may be a dance floor. Right? A dance space, rather. Another activity may be a place of study. Another one may be a place to ground and call home. Another one may be a restaurant. And so communicating with the being of this building, the being of this place, whether it exists now as an existing building or not, it's not important. Talk to it. Ask it, what forms will best support my client's highest, most beautiful expression? Or this group's, this company's abundant success? How will this space support and nourish my family? What forms want to be present? To help with that nourishment, that healing, that grounding, that peace, that beauty, that joy, that depth, that integration, that union. And start to notice what kinds of materials are emerging. Are they really solid, heavy? Are they more glass, light? Are there natural materials that are emerging for you? Really noticing the forms that are wanting to take shape, that create this beautiful vessel, supporting your creations. Beautiful. And I invite you in this moment to take another few breaths and wiggle your feet and your toes and come back to the surface of your skin, the surface of your physical body, and take out your journal. and write what came to you in this visualization. Sketch, take out your sketchbook. Sketch what came to you. What kind of forms did you see? What kind of materials did you experience? Did you receive any insights about how this space can be enriched, activated? These are one of the ways that you can start to bridge spirit with form. I invite you to really explore this this month and play with this high art form that we once knew how to build and to create. It is increasingly more and more important in these times that we find the lost temple, we resurrect it. Otherwise, we will be swayed in different directions, pulled away from our truest essence, will be lied to, tricked, deceived. I want you to be the architect that supports people in creating spaces that honor their most authentic expression and help them come back home to their truest blueprint, their soul's blueprint, their soul's purpose, their soul's joy. And empower them. A big part of this is empowerment. Empower them to be able to build their own temples within and without. Thank you for your space. It's interesting. I said, thank you for your space, but I was really thinking about saying, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining me in this space. Thank you for entering into my temple. I love opening my doors to you. And I'm excited to co-create another episode with you next time. And I want to share also before ending today's episode that I have opened the doors for the next Ephesus VIP retreat. It will be in May 2025. The application details are below. I'm also currently working on building up the Sacred Blueprint Online Course 2.0. You will soon in the next couple months hear from me about it being able to enroll for the course. I will be making it available all the time to people, to architects and designers and property owners who are eager and ready to co-create with the spirit of the land, to birth the blueprints and healing sanctuaries of our future. And make sure you also download my free guide, The 7 Steps for Mapping the Vision to Your Dream Sanctuary. It's a good introduction to the Sacred Blueprint online course, and will give you a window into what is possible when you bridge spirit with form, when you co-create with the spirit of the land, and when you really tune in and tap into your soul's purpose, and also help your clients access their soul's purpose to birth an optimal design without all the stress and grind of conventional architecture. So lots brewing, lots of programs and opportunities coming your way. Thank you again for joining me on the New Earth Architectress podcast. See you next time. Bye.